So, welcome everyone to our next lecture in compiler construction. Last time we had an overview on the general architecture that a compiler had. If you remember, there's two phases for the compiler. There's the phase where the whole piece analyzes an input program to generate an intermediate representation, out of which the next phase afterwards generates the target code. For the analysis phase, we were looking a little bit deeper into the steps that had to be done, and we could find several smaller steps that were involved. The first one being the scanner, which is the phase that takes the string input and chops it into small units, each of them being a small piece that is assembled to a structure by the phase afterwards. So that is what we are currently doing. We have been looking on how we could achieve this behavior, and we came to the idea that we would like to specify the kind of units that we want to this scanner to produce via regular expressions. The idea was that by just specifying this small specification for one of these units together with a callback function of code, what the scanner should do in case it has found one of these units. This would be our input to the scanner generator, and the scanner generator should start working on this combination of inputs and produce something that is well suited for execution on a computer, which means in our cases, when we want to do something with regular expressions, we want to generate automata, especially final automata. And yeah, that's last time we've seen a few basics on regular expressions and automata, and now we're gonna see how we can come up with a way to generate well-suited finite automaton from our regular expression and use this automaton to get a nice scanner. So, as most of you will have already had a few experiences with theoretical computer science, does anyone here remember how, or has an idea how to come from regular expressions to finite automata or something? There, you're nodding, so you know a way, or you can imagine something.
Yeah, we were taught in the bachelor's degree, so I think I can about remember how to get to an NFA.
It's probably something that is called Thompson's algorithm.
I think that was the name. Yeah.
Do you have a slight idea what this all was about?
You basically just stepped through terminal symbols were the transitions and
adding some transitions with some like empty string as well, or I have some regions, or like
kind of as intermediate bridges between your components that you have. Yeah, exactly. That is the general idea. So you start up with very small automata for the things that are quite easy to find automata for, which are the terminals, and then interconnect them in the same way so that the outcoming automaton reflects the idea of the operators that are used inside. So that is something that is done with the beginners quite frequently, because it's something that is pretty easy to understand and can be explained graphically. So that is why I still have it here on the slides. So the general idea is that you have small components for your automaton, and I have always put them together here in a way that I have several cases for what the expression for which we want to generate our subautomaton looks like. So at first, for the empty symbol, if that appears in your regular expression, well, that is either you model it directly with an empty labeled edge, or just put one state, which is the start state or the end state. Then if you have a terminal symbol in your regular expression, well, all you have to do is have a start state and an end state and connect them with a transition with only that symbol as a label. But then there are the more interesting ones that really involve kind of navigation and things. For example, there's the one that models concatenation. In these cases, you have two sub-expressions or automata that were constructed to reflect these sub-expressions. So for A and B in these cases. And what you do is you have the automaton for A and the automaton for B, and you connect them with an epsilon transition. Then what else can you do? Well, there's still the expression that is derived from alternation between A and B. And yeah, that's exactly what you have to do in your automaton. You have to alternate between two possible ways. So what you do is you have your start state and you alternate between either of these automata for A or B. So that, and afterwards you merge the control flow once again, which is done like this. So that is what you generate for the alternation. Then what you also have is the clean star, which is kind of a closure, where you repeat the automaton or even surpass it. So what you have to do there is you insert in your existing automaton for the A, you insert a back transition, which resets the whole thing. You also insert one that bypasses the whole automaton. So that is the very basics of Thompson's algorithm. That's Thompson for you, by the way, which is quite a nice thing, but it's still not the latest in the sense of what you can really achieve in terms of performance. We'll see what the drawbacks of this way of generating your automaton are. By the way, now that I've seen a lot of people arrive a little bit late, is it more convenient for you to start later on? So how many of you would like to shift the beginning by, let's say, 5 minutes or so? Okay. Are there any votes against shifting by 5 minutes? Because that will... Only you? Are you angry when I shift? So if you all have alternative things before and you would like to have 5 minutes more time to come to here, I think we will have to bite in the sour apple. If you have to translate the German. Whatever. Yeah. So let's start at 20 minutes past. So we are not disturbed so often. Okay, so in fact, the whole thing is about the number of states for my regular expression, also on the number of transitions that I have. Because, well, the thing is that for implementing the whole NFA thing, we need, well, for an algorithm, we need something deterministic. So we have to come up with a way to decide what how we interpret our input. In order to do so, we need to translate the whole NFA thing into something that is deterministic. And well, as you've already mentioned, you have the experiences in these matters. You might probably remember how, or at least a few aspects of how to come to a deterministic algorithm from NFA implementation. And well, that involves some kind of exponential blow up of your states. So the thing is having a very small number of states in the automaton that we produce here is really crucial for the next step, because the next step the number will get exponential blow up, and this might already ruin the show for us. So yeah, the key point is that we need to keep this number of states low, and with Thompson's algorithm this is a little bit difficult to achieve right from the start. So the idea is that we should probably once again have a look at how these components really work in detail and come up with a way to have a more optimized automaton at the end. So yeah, that's what we're going to do now. This whole thing is something that is not strictly new. That's something that has already been done before by two famous guys, Barry and Sethi. You might have heard the names already when you when you are interested in compilers construction. You have probably got yourself a book which is called the Dragon Book, and two of the three authors you find here on the slide. So Barry, Sethi are two of the authors of this famous Dragon Book, and yeah, that's where they come into play in respect of compiler construction. Yeah, the Barry-Sethi algorithm is an alternative to Thompson's algorithm, and it has one very important property. It does not generate a linear number of states in the input, which is the regular expression, but it produces exactly, and that is the important thing, there's no factor multiplied here. It produces exactly n plus 1 states, and even the n is not the strict length of the input, but it is the number of alphabet symbols that are used in the regular expression, which is even less than the length of the whole thing. So this is something that is quite impressive. Still not as impressive as, well, we'll see, but it's a good starting point for our exponential algorithm afterwards. So, what would be the idea in the Barry-Sethi approach? The idea is that we once again have a look at how input corresponds to the structure of the regular expression that we are dealing with, and we will have a look at it once again with in mind that when we process our input, which parts of this regular expression is involved in the next steps. And by doing that, we try to come up with an automaton structure that we are going to use for automaton generation. Yeah, in detail, what we're going to do is we will introduce a marker bullet. And with this marker bullet, we will mark the place in the syntax tree of this regular expression where we have already been while processing something, and try to show the parts of the regular expression that still have the possibility of processing the rest of the input. Well, that is a little bit shifty when I just say it like that. So let's start right on with an example, and then I think it will be a little bit clearer how I mean the whole thing. So let's get ourselves an example input, which is a regular expression like this. This will be our running example for the whole generation thing. It's probably not such an such a complicated regular expression. It just repeats A and B arbitrarily often, then definitely reads an A, and afterwards terminates with reading either an A or a B. If we want to look at the different parts of this regular expression, it is a little bit nicer to look at the syntax tree that corresponds to the whole thing, as it carries the structure of the regular expression much more visibly with itself. So we will be working on this syntax tree rather than the plain string or textual representation. Yeah, for looking at an example, we also need an example input. So this might be something that is read by our, or is captured by our regular expression. So the next thing is that we need to have a look at which components are involved when processing the whole thing. As we process the this input string from the left, we will have to step by step think about the parts of this regular expression that that are still not processed and from the left side. And when we have thought about the first symbol, we have to think about the next and so on, and try to sketch that in our syntax tree. So at the very first, we start with our bullet here on the root node. That is the kind of the state where we still are fresh and still need to process input. I write the bullet on the left side of the of a subtree, always when the part that is under this subtree is not yet has not yet been involved in the next processing step. So that's quite logical to start with the root node when we have not processed any of this input. So at first we will have to consume the symbol B. So well, when I now have a look at this this tree here, I first consider the first subtree. Well, which one of them will be involved with reading the B? Will it be the right or the left one? Left one? Everyone? No? Okay. So it's probably this one. So I should probably start thinking about how the left one treats the input. Yeah, in this case, well, it only has one child, so it's probably not so difficult to see that this child will be somehow involved. Now, which part of this subtree now will be involved in processing the input? Right. Okay, so like this. So that's what we draw on this side. So now we've reached one of the leaves, and yeah, is there any choice? No, there's no choice anymore because we have worked on all the children. So we will say, well, this is the only one that that's left, and as it is the same label as we have in the input, this will probably consume the input. So let's do that. We have removed the first B from here, and now our bullet, our marker, has reached the other side. Always when I have my bullet on the right-hand side of any subtree, this will mean that the subtree has contributed to processing already, and I am now in the state after I have used this, this subtree. So, well, there's only one way back to the alternation, so I can draw it here. So now, from here on, we have to think about the second B. So which part now will be the one that is responsible for reading? So we will, same means left. Yeah. Well, not left, but well, as we are here, we will
go
up here, and as we have a repetition here, we will still go down and go the same way. Mm-hmm. So that's what's done. And when we reach here, well, we once again consume. So that is what we do here. Yeah. Now, when I'm still on the same point here, I can ask the same question, what is the next thing? And now that we have consumed all our Bs, and we have an A here, and, well, theoretically we would have an A down there, but we know, as we can look a little bit into the future, that when we, yeah, that at this point that's okay. It's still kind of trying to see whether it will work out. I kind of spare you the bad choices because, well, we can do non-deterministic choices while still designing, and automaton afterwards will be non-deterministic, and it suffices to have one non-deterministic branch that succeeds. So, so this A here is not a good decision in this case, because when we still have two A's left here, and that's the only symbols left, well, we will have to visit this one at some time, so we'll have to go the arc to the other side of the subtree of the concatenation. So, yeah, that's what we will do. We will go over here and try to work on our concatenation first. So that's what we're doing. And now we have to consume an A. At the concatenation, there's not so much choice that we have. We have to go down here and consume that. That's the whole point why we went to the other subtree. So that's what we're going to do, and we will consume the A. And now we still have an A left. This one's processed. We go back to the concatenation. Concatenation means that I definitely have to use both sides. So I will definitely go over here, and now I have the choice again, and looking into the input, I have the A here, so we'll go here and over here while consuming the A. So now that we have processed everything, let's check whether the whole thing was a sane solution. So let's go back here. Here we don't have any choice. Here we don't have any choice. Here we don't have any choice. So we have reached the root node once again. The whole tree is now has now the bullet on the right hand side. The input is completely processed. So that was a successful run through my syntax tree of the regular expression, and that is that's one successive run. Yeah, the point is now that we have talked about what this very special example here was, how this one was processed. Now we have seen that there's certain decisions that we have to do at certain points, and this gives us a rough idea how the structure of such a regular expression is responsible for reading the input. We've also seen that there's several decisions that you can do that might turn out to be bad or good, but these are ones that we can present to the whole thing as kind of an alternative. If you think of this spot here, for example, where we have to decide whether we have to go up and out of the whole subtree, or where we still have to iterate once again, that is something. Both of these situations might seem plausible if you don't have a preview into the input. And the luxurious thing when designing non-deterministic finite automata is that we have the luxury of using non-determinism to design. So we can just say, well, either of them will be the successful action to do, so let's offer both to our automaton, and a non-deterministic engine will work out a way to deal with that. So we just connect both of these things. So that is now something that we can turn into an algorithm to come from the syntactic structure of the regular expression into an automaton by just looking at the components, the subtrees that this regular expression's syntax tree is made of, and turn them into components for an automaton. In order to do so, we have to at first do a few technical things to come to a more appropriate representation for generating this automaton. Well, one thing is just an observation, is that if the input is consumed by the leaves, well, that's okay. That doesn't leave us with any major problems. The next thing is what we've seen is that the navigation is well, that's the moving in within the subtrees. That's done doing without consumption, so that's probably epsilon transitions. Yeah. In order to come up with a formal way, which means an algorithm for our whole thing, we need to clearly describe which parts of the syntax tree we are actually working with or we want to work with. So one problem in the way that we've done here is, for example, that there we have here a subtree and here a subtree, and both of these subtrees exactly look alike, but both of them might end up with different actions that have to be done, and these actions are not determined by the these subtrees themselves, but by the position in which they occur, because they might occur in the context of, for example, this arbitrary repetition or the concatenation. In order to deal with that, we need to differentiate between them somehow, and the way to do that is, well, the most simple thing would be to kind of make their identifier dependent on the place in this in the tree where they come from. And the way how we can achieve that is, for example, by not treating the leaves as syntactically their alphabet symbol, but by just enumerating them. So that's what we are going to do. We will enumerate the leaves. That means when I come from this tree, I will go through the whole thing and put numerical identifiers on the nodes, and yeah, construct my tree with these instead of the others. Well, they are null in, index, so well, yeah, like this. So these are now our new automaton representations. We keep the we keep our labels, which we consume, as labels of this syntax tree. Okay, now when we can check whether we still have similar looking subtrees, and yeah, now that we have enumerated the leaves, we won't have any similar structures anymore, because we have renamed them. Okay, so that's just a technical thing, because we want to have these sub expressions as labels for whole subtrees. Okay, so now I've promised you to come to an algorithm for generating the non-deterministic automaton, and so we do now, with very in a way basic or naive way, by just simulating what we have seen so far in our while processing our input with just the syntax tree of a regular expression. And yeah, the idea is to have states. States are always markers in subtrees. So states are always something like tree expression and a marker either here or here, on the left or on the right, depending on whether we have processed with means of the whole subtree already or not. So coming from that, our states have certain special states, which are the start state and the end state. So the start state is the state that has its identifier is just the whole original regular expression itself, and has the marker on the left-hand side. The final state is the same expression, but the marker on the right-hand side. And what else is there? Well, there's states that in general, the rest of the states is just like we have seen already. Okay, so apart from the states, what else we need is we need transitions between these states. So the most basic ones, the ones that we most easily have found, are the ones that are consuming input. So for every leaf in our syntax tree, we start with this consuming transitions, and these consuming transitions are quite easily done. That's these transitions that start from the with a bullet to the left of an alphabet symbol. They consume the alphabet symbol itself and end in the state that marks the right of this alphabet symbol. And the whole thing, of course, for our leaves that are designed in a way that we have this numerical value and the attached alphabet symbol. Okay, but now we only have what do we have? We have an automaton consisting in several states that are unconnected and only like this, only transitions that are beneath these ones. So we still need the ones that navigate the whole syntax tree. And these are dependent on the kind of subtree that we're working on. The kind is determined by the operator that is annotated in the inner node of this subtree. So let's check how they might look like. I've given them to you already, but let's have a look at what these structures do in a kind of graphical way. So, the first one that we look at is the subtree that is for the ordination. That is this one. So which edges do we introduce here? Which transitions? Well, that's the ones that we can read from here. So let's have a look what this the whole thing means. For this one here, this means that from the state that is associated with the start here, we connect them with the start of the sub automaton, and we connect them with, yeah, well, all of them are connected with epsilon. I will leave the epsilon out of the whole drawings from now. What else is connected? We have connection from the beginning of the whole thing to the other alternative, like this. That's this one. And what else do we need? Well, we need to handle somehow the returning processes. So let's look at this one, where the R1 is finished. This one connects to the end of the whole sub-expression, same as this one. So in terms of components, this one can be used to connect either to the left-hand side or to the right-hand side, which is the alternation. Yeah. Same thing we can do for the concatenation. Yeah. How to do that? Well, we need the concatenation. We have sub automata R1 and R2. We have control flow coming from the start of the subtree. And we connect to, well, in case of concatenation, we need to connect to the left-hand side. Coming from the left-hand side, we need to connect to, well, where do we need to connect to? To the right, to the left-hand side of the right-hand automaton. like this. And when we have, when we are done with our right-hand side automaton, we need to connect, reconnect to the top, just like this. So that's the next component that we have. Yeah, we have the star. Well, that is something that's pretty small compared, because it has only one child. And here we start. Well, what can we do from the start state? We can either ignore the automaton below and just go right to the end, or we use our automaton, our child automaton, so we connect over there. This leads to kind of the first application of my child automaton. Afterwards, well, what do we do when we have used our child automaton? We can either connect to the end in case that we do not need to use it anymore, or we have to use it again, so we connect it over there. That's this one. Yeah, and that's the way how we handle our whole syntactic structure. And afterwards we have a graph that is exactly an automaton that is non-deterministically giving us accepting whenever we have an input that matches our regular expression. Okay, so that is the naive way to come up with an automaton. Yeah. And this kind of this little word naive is already bothering me. That always means that we can do a little bit more. And yeah, what is not so fine with the automaton that we have built up so far? Well, yeah, you've seen that the ones that are doing actual work, the ones that are consuming, are these transitions are not so very many. The most of the transitions that we have are just for navigating through my syntax tree and ignoring what the input is. So that is something that already should ring a bell for, well, there's a lot going on that I have potential for, where I can see potential for optimizing. Also, having a lot of epsilon transitions is, well, epsilon transitions by themselves are already on non-deterministic, so getting rid of non-determinism means we need to get rid of these epsilon transitions. Also, there's whole chains of epsilon transitions that we need to go through our automaton, and yeah, that introduces a lot of intermediate states that are might probably end up in the same collecting state afterwards when we do our generation of the deterministic automaton. So yeah, there's a lot of potential where we can still work on, and that's exactly what we want to do. We want to get rid of as many epsilon transitions as possible already in our first generation phase. So that is something that we want to do in order to come up with a more sophisticated version, still with the goal in mind to produce as less states as possible for the whole thing. So, yeah. This is something that is probably not so easy. We had introduced a lot of these epsilon transitions because we didn't have a kind of global view on the whole syntax tree, but merely had to decide very locally about what steps to do next. And we had very local, very many nodes in between where we had to decide locally. So that is something that we might change by introducing more information in our generation process that helps us in probably getting rid of these long chains of connecting epsilon transitions. And yeah, now we can wonder what information would we need in order to make these chains of transitions shorter. What is with the number?
Yeah, minimum number of matching states for each side of the generation.
You're thinking of the situation we had in the example where we still had two remaining and had to.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be
so
probably in.
Calculating how many states we can still process with the rest of the tree to jump out early enough, maybe, so that we extensively throw out the epsilon transition with a more sophisticated step that might.
That is already. That would mean that we have had to find a way to somehow count in the whole thing. And that is a property that is not so easily done in finite automata, especially, well, when I say not so easy, counting is something that we cannot do in a unbounded way. So, in principle, nice idea, but I think for this generation here, it's a little bit too much. But there's still ways to say, if you say that you have these kind of chains of connected inputs that we are sure we might, for example, already save a lot of intermediate steps when we leave out all the inner nodes and just connect them directly on the bottom, for example. That would probably not go so far as counting, but still giving us the chance to kind of go on the bottom level. And that's something that that we want to achieve. In order to do so, we come up with a few attributes that help us doing these very direct connections between the whole things. For example, what we need is when we descend into one of these subtrees, we need information about what will be the first states that might be reached. That is a way to get rid of a lot of intermediate steps when descending. And there's these interconnections. So when we have finished with one reading state, for example, we need to connect to the next one in line, which would be information about what can be the next when being at a certain position. Then we need information. Well, there's something that we don't know right now, but afterwards for construction, we will need information about what might be the last reading states in our automaton. And intermediary, we will need information about whether a subtree absolutely has to read something, or whether we might have to skip, because then we have to look to our right neighbor for the next connection. So that is all information that we would like to have very much in our building phase. And the question is now, how can we come up with these quite complex attributes? And the idea is to use one of the multifunctional tools that we have seen already in something like basic algorithms classes or so. And that is depth first search, which we can use as a tool when going through trees. Depth first search is kind of a way in which to enumerate the nodes of a tree in a certain way. And when we use it as a kind of tool for gathering information, we can use an engine for depth first search that provides kind of support for callbacks. These callbacks are things that we can specify, and they are executed at certain times within our depth-first search. As for example, callbacks that you can specify for that are called before a subtree is entered in the depth-first search, or also callbacks that are triggered when the depth-first search is finished with this subtree, and control flow goes back up. So there's possibilities of registering callbacks there, and that is a tool that we can use to gather information in trees, and that's what we're going to do on these syntax trees for regular expressions. For example, the first information that we would like to have is the one that tells us about whether the subtree that we are seeing right now is a subtree that will definitely have to end up with an automaton that definitely has to be executed, or whether it might be that it is skipped somehow. So, yeah, that's something. When we are presented with the whole automaton at once, it's not so easy to see, but we can locate certain nodes for which we can definitely say quite easily which whether they have to end up with an automaton that needs to be executed, or whether they might be skipped. So, do we have an idea which ones are or which ones would be easy to decide? Okay.
Yeah, as soon as you reach a star, you can say this subtree can be skipped, and if you don't reach a star, you can say that this subtree has to be executed before reaching.
So, for the star, for example, we know that star might end up with an empty or with a non-executed subtree. So for the star, we can annotate true.
And if we go to the right tree, as soon as we see the left entry of the second combination, we
okay.
can say that this tree has to be executed because there's a leaf which has to be
executed. This one.
Right.
So that's actually the one that I wanted to point out. The leaves are really easy to decide. These are the ones that are always non-empty, so they are false in this case. So, and we can annotate all of them with the property that they definitely are not empty. So that's what I was preparing already. And now the idea is that for certain types we already know, but for others there might be propagation involved. So the general idea, general concept would be to look at subtrees where all the children are already annotated with information, and try to come up with this property for the whole subtree. So let's, for example, look at this one. For this one, we have decided for the left and for the right child that both of them will never be empty. So ideas for the whole subtree is probably quite easy. It's also not empty, because either way we choose, won't be empty. Same we can do for this one. Also not empty, so that's what we're doing here. Now we come to different subtrees. There's the one for concatenation. Is there anything different for concatenation? Well, in this case, not so far. It's still not empty. But now comes into play our very special operator. This is the clean star, and this one introduces possibility for the subtree to not contribute to reading. So for this, we will mark with true. Now we have to decide for the root node what to do here. So what would be the appropriate idea here? Might it be empty?
No.
Why not? And you're referring to the right one, I think. Yeah, exactly. Because the left one is the one that introduces possibility for that the whole thing might be empty, but as at least the second one is guaranteed to be non-empty, we can actually decide that the whole thing won't be empty. So, false here. Okay. when you have paid attention to the way how we came up with solutions for our subtrees, you've probably seen that all the attributes that we had here were annotated in a kind of bottom-to-top way. We started from the leaves and came to the top at the end. So, thinking back to what we said before, that we would be using this concept of depth-first traversal for implementing the whole thing. Yeah, which are the callbacks that we need to override? Well, we need names for that. In fact, the whole things are the two options that you have here is that you can override the post-order traversal hooks or the pre-order traversal hooks. So the pre ones are the ones that are called before you descend into the subtree. The post-order ones are the ones that come after you have visited the subtree. Yes? For the you could already annotate it while descending, that's true, but it's not crucial to defer this information until you redescend. But actually you could override the pre-order hook already. Yes, that's right. Okay. So, apart from that, well, how do we specify for this depth-first traversal our operations? Well, we can do that in terms of systems of equalities. That's something that you see here, and this in the case of depth-first traversal in the post-order way, we specify them in the way that you see at the bottom. You always specify how the attribute for the parent node is computed depending on the attributes for the child nodes. So the empty attribute, well, that's probably not the wisest to start with because we didn't talk about that before. Well, for the leaves, it's actually quite easy. We can just annotate them with something that we can decide locally when we are at the very bottom. And what we have to annotate here is whether the alphabet symbol that we have labeled the whole leaf with is epsilon or not. So we will come up with a simple true or false in this case. So, but the interesting ones are the ones that are the intermediary nodes that belong to actual trees. And for these, we specify the whole thing via for the attribute empty and a subtree that is representing the alternative. We compute the value for this thing via the logical OR of the values for both of these alternatives. Same way we specify for the concatenation. It is the value of the concatenation is dependent on the values of the children, but in this case, logical and. That's the next one is the one that is was quite easy to see from the start because it's not depending on the value of the child. It's just in any way it will be. It might be empty and thus will be true in this case. Same thing for the question mark operator. We haven't dealt with this one too much in detail, but it's acting like the clean star and might end up with not being executed. Okay. So these are our empty attributes. That's something we could quite easily compute by using our special depth-first traversal engine. So let's see whether we can use the whole thing for our next for the next attribute, which is called first. Yeah, the this attribute is an attribute which carries a little bit more information as just a plain Boolean value, but it will rather be a whole set of states. Numbers in our cases, so it will be a set of numbers, and it will be the set of states that might be reached at very first when we descend into this subtree. There might be alteration involved, so there are several possibilities, so the whole thing needs to be sets, but anyway we can always find some first state. So, yeah, let's have a look at our example once again. We need to come up with something to begin with. Once again, the question, you see any easy low-hanging fruit here? Any notes where we can right away say which are the first reached leaves? Well, once again, yeah.
Yeah, 0A, 1B, and 2A.
Exactly. So it's once again, it's the leaves because, well, you cannot descend any further. So you're pretty much already determined which of these the first ones will be. So we can start once again with the leaves, and now in red we find the first sets for the leaves annotated, and these are actually only the labels of the leaves, so nothing special here. And once again we use the same way of computing the intermediary values for the subtrees, and yeah, we'll probably start with all of the subtrees that already have information for the children. So this one and this one. So what is the first set for this subtree? Which are the states that might be reached at first when processing with this subtree? Either of them. So we will, which is the set? 0 and 1, both of them. So yeah, so either is kind of translated in something like the union of both of these sets. So it will be 0, 1. Same thing we will do over here. So we will end up with 0, 1 and 3, 4. So we now we can continue. Star operator. No, I was supposed to. Same set. So we will still have 0, 1. So next one will be concatenation. Didn't hear?
2, 3, 4.
Correct? So there was some things mentioned.
Only 2, because 3 can be after 2.
So that's exactly the thing that you need to pay attention to now. For the concatenation, this means that the left-hand side will definitely be used. So we will have a look at the left-hand side, and yeah, in this case, we can just take our 2. So Now we can decide for the topmost set.
All three?
Well, that was an invalid answer before, all three.
Well, yeah, because now you have the star, so you might have zero, you might have one, or you might have two, depending on the situation.
We can make that more formal by looking at this one. So it's we already have the this condition in an evaluated form. We have the property whether the whole subtree is contributing or not. Or better to say whether the subtree might be skipped, and that is the important part here. If the left part might be skipped, we will have to use both of the first sets. Okay, so that's what we're going to do here. Okay, so that is making the difference. Good. Let's once again have a look at well, we have generated our attributes on in a bottom to the top way, so it's still the post-order traversal, and yeah, so we can come up with a definition that we can just pass into our depth traversal, the first traversal tool. So we have to come up with equations systems, and yeah, we will specify, for example, the very basic ones with the first of the edges of the leaves. Will be decided by, well, it's just the label that we find attached to this leaf, and in every other case, we will have to specify in the form that we already know, meaning that we have on the left hand side the identifier for the subtree, which is here the alternation. And on the right-hand side, the components from which to build the whole thing. And in case of alternation, well, we have seen that we have to take the union of the two subtrees that we have already evaluated. So that's what we're doing here. Yeah, and now comes the concatenation. This is the more tricky bit that we've seen already. So in general, in a special case, we've seen that we only need to take the first set from the left-hand side. It's this special case, and in which case are we allowed to do that? In the case that we definitely know that the left-hand side will be used, or you can also subscribe with will not be skipped. That's why we have the false here. So in this case, we know that it is just the plain left-hand side's first set. In the case that left subtree might be skipped, which means that the empty attribute is true, we will have to also consider the first set for the right-hand side. So that's why we have the second first set involved here. So we come up with, let's go over here. We have to use the union. And then there's the simple ones that we've seen. That is this clean star, which just means that we can take the children's value. And same goes for the question mark operator. Okay, so yeah, that was not so hard. We could reuse most of the ideas that we had already. So you kind of start to see a certain pattern going on here. So let's try this pattern with the next attribute, which is ironically, the next read states. What is this expressing? Well, the next state should be the ones where we will later on connect from the leaf that we have seen already. So this will, in the end, try to come up with the connections here in between those. These are probably not valid, but in principle, these are the ones where we need the next four. We will need to have a list of or a set of these of the nodes that are candidates for direct connections. So that's what we need the next sets for. So let's try our tool, which is this computation with basic cases. Yeah, for next states, what is the basic case here? Once again, probably the leaves.
So
I didn't quite get it.
We would have already reached the leaf for the previous state. So we have to take from that leaf where we have reached. So we have to consider all 0, 1, 2 possibilities. We can reach the leftmost subtree. So that is the leaf. So that also we can consider. And we could have reached the rightmost part, that is the first state.
That's in fact the strategy that we want to do. The left-hand ones are the the right-hand ones are the ones where we for sure know that after them there will be nothing else. So these are the ones that might probably be the ones that are easy to compute, and from them we can propagate this information over there to the left. So that is now a little bit of a different strategy that we had before, and that is one that we can enforce with, can try to do with the other direction coming from the top, because well, this is the one definitely where there's nothing else, and from this we can go over to these and then next one, these ones. So let's start with the whole thing. We can start with the next state for the top, which is empty set. Yeah, for the next one, for its right hand side child, will there be a next one after this one? Could be, could not be. Sir?
Yes, it can come to the right tree, so 3, 3,
4. Yeah, in this case, you have to be careful because we are emanating from the case that we have already worked with what comes below. So once again, having things only works for certain states, and this is it's an empty set in this case because we cannot re-enter the whole thing once again in the case of concatenation. So for the alternating thing and the whole children here, we will have also empty. Okay, so starting from them now, we can go back up and have a look at the left children, for example, this one here. Yeah, next one for 2. 3, 4. Why? Exactly, 3 or 4, but why?
Because it's the first.
You can reuse what you've already done. So yeah, you can write like this. Just take the one that you've already produced as our last set. Yeah, this one we also need a next set. Well, we could try to use the same strategy. We will have a look at the first of the right sibling and take it into our set, so we come up with the 2. Now we have the parent for this one, so we are able to have a look at this, so we'll probably take 2 into account, but whoa, surprisingly, there's not only the 2, but there's also 0 and 1. Any ideas why? You don't necessarily need or well, yeah. Yeah, I think so. Okay, and then apart from that, I can just bring those from the top to here. Okay, so let's try to come up with what we can do here. So, yeah, this time we would need a pre-order traversal to through the whole thing, but we also have to make sure that in the pre-order traversal we traverse to the rightmost child at first. Okay, so how do we specify this? In case of pre-order traversal, we need to specify for children of a certain subtree how we compute our desired property with respect to the parent's property. So this time we will have the expressions for the subtrees on the left hand side in always in relation to what the parent's value was. Okay, so let's start with the alternation. The next information will just be copied from the parent. Nothing too fancy here. Then for the concatenation. For the concatenation, we have seen that this is a little bit difficult and depends on, once again, emptiness. I've done it wrong before, it seems. It was a little bit too sloppy. The question is, when do we have to contribute with the next set of our right of the parent to the first set of the right-hand side? And this is decided by the emptiness of the right-hand side, whether the right-hand side definitely contributes or does not. In case the right-hand side is not used or skipped, we have to incorporate the influence that we get from the parent for our next thing. Okay. Yeah. So what we have to do is we have to evaluate whether the right-hand side might be skipped. If it is skipped, we take our next and add it to the first that we already have. Okay. The easy ones, which are not dependent on any other on any case distinctions, is the ones over here with the clean star. This one is working on well. The next set for the child is dependent on the next set for the parent, but as it not like this. It's as it is possibly skippable. We need to connect as the sets for the or to the union for the set of the child together with the set of the parent, as we might descend in there or we might leave the whole thing. So yeah, that's it. Okay, question mark once again for at home. Yeah. So then we have one last information that we need. It's, yeah, ironically the last attribute, and that's one that we could now do once again. But turns out that it is just the same pattern that we follow as we had for the first. We can work from the bottom to top and compute our last states emanating from the leaves. And yeah, the only thing that's different to the first sets is which of the branches is preferred. So let's skip this computation. There's not so much difficulties going on, but instead we can go right to the equation systems. And yeah, once again we have the sub expression subtrees on the left-hand side and the components of them on the right-hand side, and the only thing that's different is that to the first sets is that we have dependency on the right-hand side instead of the left-hand side. So it's pretty much the same as the left-hand side. Okay, as the first set. Okay, so giving all our equality systems to the that first traversal engine with the correct parameterization, we will end up with our tree being annotated with all the information that we need. And now that we have all the information that was at first seemed to be quite difficult to gather, we can now try to once again look at the automaton generation scheme that we had before and try to do it better than last time. So now we have a more sophisticated version of our Berry-Sethi algorithm. And yeah, the thing is that now we have access to more information, and this access is also used in our scheme, how we construct our Berry-Sethi algorithm. So let's have a look at how the whole thing works now. States now have been greatly, or we are able to greatly reduce the number of states now. In fact, all the states that we need one particular state for our reading states, which is always associated with a leaf somehow. And additionally, we need some starting state. That is also why we can say that our why we had this complexity measurement at the beginning. It's simply just a number of leaves, which is number of reading states, which is directly the number of occurring alphabet symbols in our regular expression. And we also have the starting state, which is a kind of entry point into the whole thing. We need that for the case when we can possibly skip the whole automaton. That's why we need this one. Okay, the start state is our only non-leaf state. That's this one. The final state will be, the final state is dependent whether we can skip the whole regular expression and already flag accept or not. This one is given to us by the empty flag. If the whole automaton is not empty, the only accepting states in our automaton are allowed to be the ones that are inside the last attribute of the whole automaton. That is the last set of the root node. Okay, in every other case, that's the cases where we can skip the whole automaton, we will still have the entries from our last set, but we also have to incorporate one that's captures the skipped version of the whole regular expression, where we didn't really descend into the whole thing. So in this case, our starting state is also an accepting state. We didn't need to use the whole tree. Yeah. So what are the other transitions? The other transitions are strictly ones that are non-empty, that are that are deterministic. Well, no, at least with not with an empty symbol on as a label, and they are always connected to a reading state. And yeah, labels are put from our starting state to the initial reading states that might be reached when starting from the whole tree. So we'll have to have a look at the first set of the whole syntax tree, and those are the ones that we're gonna connect to from the start state. So from start state here, we connect to a reading state with the label A that we can get from exactly this thing. So we have the transitions that emanate from the start state to our initial states, and the only ones that we need to connect now are the ones that are at the bottom. We need to draw connections between the bottom nodes. So that's what we're doing next. Two bottom nodes are connected if the second one is a member of the next set of the first one. So easy. And yeah, we do that in, with the label that we find on the second edge. Yeah, because the first one we have already used for navigating from the start state. That's all. Okay, so in summary, what does Berry City mean? We need to compute in a preparation phase a lot of information that is kind of globally for the whole, or global for the whole syntax tree of the regular expression. And we need to do that before, because afterwards, in the next session, we try to connect as intelligent as possible from one state to the other, and the connections depend on exactly the global information that we have produced with the preparation phase. So that's what Berry City is about. The best way to really understand how the whole thing works is just try to program it at home. It's really not so difficult. You just need to find or come up with a framework for dealing with these syntax trees and registering your callbacks for depth first searches, and then program separate callback collections for the different attributes, and after that just evaluate the attributes that you have found so far. Okay, so it's quite programmer friendly, the whole thing. I would recommend to do that as a kind of exercise at home. So, what do we produce with the Berry City algorithm? That is, in our example, the automaton that is generated. Considering that we emanated from something as simple as this one, we might have expected a little bit or something that is a little bit more compact, but you have to keep in mind that this is still full of non-determinism. There's still labels that are matching, even though their edges or their transitions come from the same state. So that's for sure not the final thing that we will use for our thing. But that's still an automaton that when you count the number of states, you have five states that originate from the original alphabet symbols, which are the thing, and there's one initial state that we have to have for kind of management purposes. This would have come into play when the whole thing would be empty. Yeah, the construction that you've seen so far is if you look at it historically, well, we've called it Berry City algorithm so far, but you have to keep in mind that Berry City are in the kind of Western world the ones that are connected with this approach. There's also another publication from a guy called Glushkov, which is exactly doing the same, but has been this was Cold War times where research was not so coordinated, so there were findings that were on both sides of the borders. So yeah, it's not so easy to say which of these minds were the ones that were earlier. So yeah, we should pay them both respects. Okay, where is it used? It's used for XML and content models, and but still, that's something that when you compare it to the original regular expression, that's probably not so satisfying, because we might have expected something like this. This would be the minimal non-deterministic automaton that we would have expected, but yeah, that's one that's not so so easy to come up with directly, and yeah, that's also something that the Thompson construction would not have produced. So even though we didn't find the minimal version, it's still very small, and we can use it for the next step, which is making our deterministic automaton out of a non-deterministic one. And as we have already indicated, there's something called the power set construction, which is something that produces quite a lot of states. So does anyone by chance remember how power set construction works?
Yes. Yeah, we have a table with the starting state and all the possible symbols that can be consumed, and then from the starting state we combine all the other states that can be reached via one symbol to a set of symbols, and this becomes a new state that we put in the table.
So that's the key point in the whole thing. For the automaton that is produced by the power set construction, we take as states power sets of old states, which is the combinations of old states. And yeah, we can have a look at what this does to our automaton. So let's have a start state, and then we might decide that we want to start with something like the A transition and have a look at the in the original non-deterministic one at this the states that we might reach from the start with A. This will be 0 and 2, so we will take 0 and 2 into a combined state. We do we include them in the same set and introduce this as the first step in our deterministic automaton. Now we will continue. I don't know, I don't remember exactly, I think I've did with B. B is quite easy to see because it's only one transition, so it's just this one. From the state 0 or 2, how do I continue from these ones? Yes?
Yeah, we use all possible transitions from both states, so 0 and 2.
Exactly, we have to look at both of the old states that we have included in this set. So it's these. If I want to go out from here with the A, I have to look at, well, from 0, I can go with A to 0, I can go to 2, and from 2, this was the other one here, I can go to 3. I think that's all, probably. So let's have a look at whether it's not so easy like that. Yeah, so it's 0, 2, and 3. I've probably added a few more transitions. But you can imagine how the whole thing works. You have to pick the particular components of your set, have a look at the old automaton, which are the possible destinations, and include them into your new state. Compare whether you have the state already in your set of states. If not, add a new one. If you have it already, connect to the old one. And that's the way how you can compute your final deterministic automaton. Okay, so that's so far what we have had in theoretical computer science. Now, we know that we can come up with such an automaton, but there's also a drawback with formal construction. We had the informal one already. The formal one is not so difficult. Well, it boils down to having a look at the transition function. The transition function takes as parameter a whole set of old states, and with each of the states of the old states that are in our input summary state, we have a look at the old transition function from our non-deterministic algorithm, which is this delta, and pick the destination states and include them all in a new composed state. That's all. So it's not so difficult to formalize. So that's why you also did that in theoretical computer science. And yeah, in practice, there's just one aspect that's not so nice, because well, when you do combinations of all your old states, well, you can do exponentially many of them, and this means that you will come up with the power sets of your original sets for all sets you have to generate with this proceeding, and yeah, that's exponentially many. That's not a good thing for practically usable algorithms. So yeah, what can you do now? There's several ideas to cope with that. The first idea that is probably motivated by the way we have constructed the whole thing manually is that we want to start with an initial state and just generate all the states that are reachable from a start. Yeah, that's one way. So you don't have to generate the combinations of states that don't really happen in practice. But even then, the automaton is still very, very large, very huge. And yeah, that's something that one might choose to ignore, but it actually happens already also. And if you have a look at efficient regular expression matches like grep, for example, on Unix systems, they've decided to not do this whole exponential construction, but rather try to do a kind of lazy implementation of the whole thing, which means that they won't do the whole construction beforehand, but for each input they will generate the part of the automaton that they actually need on the fly. This means that even though there might be an exponential state space, they only explore as many states as they need for exactly this input. And that's the amount of complexity that they need to invest anyway. So that's a kind of plausible way. And for example, in this case, we have the input A, B, A, B. And for these cases, I will first start with the automaton for A, come up with the first state. Then I will need to process B. So I start with B from 0 and 2, which will generate me the state 1, 4. Then I once again need to come up with A, and from 1, 4, I will either be finished already or go to, well, to 1. I have to pursue the A, so I have to go to 0 or 2, which I already have. And then I have to go once again to B, and this means that I can process my input with only a fraction of the states that I theoretically would need. So that's power set construction by need for you. So yeah, that's for at home. I think we're done with this chapter for today. Next time we're going to have a look at how we can integrate the parts that we have generated now into a working scanner, and probably also see a little bit of scanner working, and then start with the next phase. I thank you for your attention, and I think I have to wish you a nice holiday. I think it's Easter next Monday, so we'll meet in 2 weeks. Have a nice holiday, and goodbye.